Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, John Karsibayev.
Hey, I'm Clay Davis. I'm the Global Vice President of Data and IoT at Tech Data.
Clay, thanks so much for joining us on the Ivy Podcast today. I know it's the holiday season and you took some time, you know, to talk to us today, lend your expertise. Much appreciated. Tell us a little bit more about your background, where you come from, career path, and then we'll spend a little bit of time talking about your current role.
Yeah, sure. Happy to do it, John. I'm really, really happy to be here. I appreciate you inviting me on the pod. So I guess I'll start from a college standpoint. So I live in Raleigh, North Carolina. I went to school in Chapel Hill, graduated from the business school at Chapel Hill. I'm a lifelong Tar Heel. And my first job was selling medical equipment. So I was in a very small company, basically reporting to the CEO, going door to door to anything to national hospitals down to, you know, vets and chiropractors. And you earn your sales chops doing that. There's no doubt about it. And so after about a year of doing that, I had an opportunity to join IBM as a seller, and was able to go through a training program there. They call it the Summit program. And, you know, John, that was one of the best experiences I've ever had, because there's not many companies in the world that will invest 6 to 9 months into you just to train you, right? And learn sales skills and learn the skills so you can be successful. But a big company like IBM. So I exited that program and kind of went through, a sales journey, sales career path within IBM for 8 years, where, I started as a seller and I jumped around from accounts and different types of technology, but it was all within analytics, AI, you know, that realm within technology. And, basically, from day one, I think this is just ingrained in me and the way I was brought up. I always wanted to get into leadership. And so I'm huge on mentorship, leadership, and coaching. And so it just felt like it was something that was going to be natural to me. And so I really wanted to get into that. So I got into that within IBM and was lucky enough to land some management spots and learned a ton there. I loved the teams that I had over the course of my career at IBM. And about a year ago, I got approached to move to a company called Tech Data, where they needed someone to lead their data IoT analytics, kind of organization globally. Someone that had never been in that role before, to work with the vendors and the business partners in that world. And it ended up being a great fit for me personally, and my growth and what I wanted to do. And so that's where I am today. And I lead a team of about 100 people globally, where all we concentrate on every day is, you know, kind of bringing data and IoT to customers across the globe. And it's a really exciting thing. And for those that don't know Tech Data, based in Clearwater, Florida, and, you know, we're a global distributor of, you know, anything from mouse pads to AI and IoT and everywhere in between.
Wow, that's super exciting. And something that you mentioned at the beginning, you know, going door to door and doing all the kind of the cold calling and the sales, it's, like you said, it's, you really get that, you know, real life experience, and where you have to get creative, where, you know, the perseverance and a lot of the basic skills that, you foster as a professional. I think that's always, you know, a great opportunity to learn from that experience and grow from there. So that's, that sounds pretty exciting. I've gone through a similar path. From your current role perspective, can you expand a little bit more on what really falls under your purview when we talk about the data, the analytics, and how does that help your organization solve the problems, you know, for your customers?
Sure. It's a great question. The whole, we're in the channel, right? So the channel is distribution, it's business partners, it's helping both vendors and business partners scale, right? To as many end customers as possible, right? That's our whole goal, is getting technology like AI, like IoT, like databases and BI into the hands of end customers as efficiently and effectively as possible, right? That's our goal. So we work with vendors like Cisco, IBM, AWS, right, Microsoft, and many others across the globe, right, big and small, to try and get those, you know, their solutions into the hands as into the hands of as many business partners and as many end users as possible. Because, I mean, and this is why I love my job, because we have one, we have great people, but two, we have just really cool technology that we can try to get in the hands of as many end users as possible.
No, that's great. And that's, you know, I have quite a few questions for you from that standpoint when it comes to, you know, the IoT and, you know, the data analytics, because from our perspective at ProSource, one of the, especially the past couple of years, some of the most challenging skill sets to find and, you know, to recruit for are in that space, you know, are, you know, the data architects, the people who really understand data in the sense that how to use that to, you know, some actionable strategies that are in place that allow not only the executives, but the, at every level of the organization to use the data to make certain decisions. So that's pretty exciting. And something you've mentioned as well, having really cool technologies, which leads me to another point. Innovation, I'm pretty sure, is at the core of, you know, one of the, you know, as a culture for your organization, that to build and foster a culture of innovation is one of the most strategic and, you know, top priority initiatives. From your standpoint, from you as a leader, what strategies or initiatives that really have helped you in the past or even in your current job to really build and motivate and foster such culture of innovation? Just if you have any examples of that you can share with us, that would be glad to hear that.
Yeah, sure, John. And innovation is so important. And the way I look at it is that innovation is taking action really quickly. It's not waiting. It's taking action really quickly. It's learning from inevitable failure. You're always going to fail, right? Especially if you're trying something new. And then taking action quickly again, right? So it's taking action, failing, taking action quickly again, and just putting that on repeat. And so I think that innovation is that repeat cycle. And you know, that's really hard to do. It's easy to say, it's really hard to do, because you have to develop a culture that is ready for that. You have to develop a culture that's willing to go try something fast and being okay with it not succeeding every time. Right. And that can be a really hard culture to define. But some of the best companies in the world, the ones that are innovating the fastest, are the ones that do that day in and day out and built a culture around that. And so there's a number of ways to go about that. Right. I think that autonomy is a really big driver of innovation. Right. Those that feel like that they have the ability to go do the things that they want to do, not being told what to do. I think flattening the organization is really key. Right. Not having this big hierarchical structure, red tape, right. That's going to slow down innovation. And just, again, driving that culture that failure is almost desired. Right. And the speed in acting is really, really needed. One thing that I kind of had known about, but I didn't know the word for it or the, you know, what it was called, but at Tech Data, what we preach is servant leadership. And servant leadership is basically flipping the org chart upside down, right? Like, the customer is the most important asset to the business, right? No doubt about it, right? Without customers, your business is nothing. And so look at who within your organization touches the customer most, right? It's the customer support staff. It's the sales staff, right? It's all these folks that are touching the customers day in and day out. And they're the ones that should be at the top of the chain, right? And everyone should serve their needs, right? Not their wants, but their needs. Everyone should serve their needs. So everyone should be working for them. And so servant leadership is kind of the act of, right, as a leader, right, I need to remove barriers for those people and for the people that serve those people, right? And so we need to do everything we can to serve the needs of those who are closest to the customer, and everything will work out, and that'll drive innovation.
Well, that's great. And I love those examples from a standpoint of, you know, really creating this environment of, you know, where everyone feels empowered in a sense that not only bringing ideas to the table, but also knowing that the idea is actually going to be taken, you know, seriously, it's going to be considered, even though if, you know, it's up to you to make sure that your idea actually brings value. It does make an impact, whether on the ROI or, you know, the revenue or the customer. And like you said, from the leadership standpoint, really walking the walk, not only just saying things for the sake of saying, but that servant leadership concept, you know, it's pretty unique. And a lot of companies say those things, but rarely you see the actual, you know, actions and strategies in place to allow for that, which is, you know, which is great to hear from the examples that you're giving. And also kind of when I think of innovation, it also makes me think a lot about experimentation. It's when you create the, you know, when you give the employees an opportunity to experiment and to really make sure that the particular idea or a product or a feature actually does work, and actually, and treating these lessons learned not necessarily as a failure, but also as an opportunity to learn and how to tweak. And I think as a culture, when you treat it that way, that, hey, not necessarily we failed, but we actually discovered something better that allows us to bring a better product, I think that's really cool. So definitely thanks for sharing those ideas. When we talk about, you know, IoT, advanced technologies, artificial intelligence, and so forth, you know, they're transforming and have been transforming information technology as a whole, in general, as an industry even. How do you think these trends will impact kind of your industry from innovation standpoint? And more importantly, I'm curious to hear from, you know, as an executive, what are the recommendations that you have for, you know, for implementing such advanced technologies at your organization? Because we hear digital transformation, we hear all these, you know, big, you know, buzzwords, but when it comes to the actual, you know, leveraging and utilizing, implementing such technologies at your organization, is a completely different story. Just want to hear your perspective on that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, as with any new technology, right, they all become commonplace and it almost happens before our eyes. I mean, think about computers. They've become extremely normal, right? A computer in your pocket, right? Your phone has become very normal, right? The cloud became normal over the last couple of years, right? It's just, I see no difference, right? With IoT, with AI, with some of these advanced technologies, they're going to become normal, right? We're mid-process of them becoming normal or standard. And so I think it's those companies and people, right, that invest in knowledge and kind of the know-how right now that are going to have that distinct advantage as these things normalize, right? And they become just more standardized across the industry. You know, I kind of go back to, like, if you think about a strategy, right? How do you adopt these technologies? It's, you just have to start. Right? It goes back to, you just got to act, you got to try, you got to start. Because you have to remember that no one was fully qualified when they started anything. Mm-hmm. So if you're not feeling fully qualified, I mean, congratulations, you're with 100% of your peers. So AI and IoT, right? They are small acronyms that sound big and they sound scary and they can sound techie if you don't know it, or you don't know it super well, or you've only read a couple articles about it, right? But they're nothing more than, you know, more effective ways than today to drive business outcomes, to increase revenue, to decrease costs. So, right. Or improve customer service. So, you know, this gets back to innovation. We just got to start, right. Open the dialogue, try something, fail, learn, repeat, right. Do that over and over. And you're going to adopt this awesome technology and put it to great use and, you know, drive awesome business outcomes for your organization.
Right. Absolutely. No, I love the simplicity aspect of that, that it doesn't have to be, as you said, something that's super complicated, something super scary. I mean, it can be treated as a simple opportunity to improve certain processes, certain, you know, aspects of your business. So that makes perfect sense. Just want to shift gears a little bit to talk about the different trends and ideas that you're super passionate about. It doesn't necessarily have to be in your industry or within your organization. Just what is Clay super excited about? What are you researching? What do you think will be the next big thing? I love, you know, to hear your perspective from that standpoint. Whether you're looking to invest in that or implement it, just share with us some of the trends and ideas that excite you.
Sure. Yeah. So, I mean, obviously I'll start with, you know, AI and IoT are stuff that excites me. Like, I think this stuff is really, really cool with 5G coming out and just this stuff becoming more and more mainstream, right? I think it's more, these are coming more than just buzzwords, right? It's like, how do they become more than just for the nerds?
Right.
You know, like, how do we make it mainstream and accessible and put this awesome, amazing technology in the hands of, you know, a business person that can make a really, really big impact? So I think that those are really cool. And then kind of outside of, you know, outside of our discussion here, cryptocurrency is something that I'm super interested in, right? I mean, Bitcoin is basically at an all-time high right now, right? I think it hit 28K yesterday, and I think it dropped another 1,000, but it's a little volatile at the moment. but I think cryptocurrency, blockchain, right? All of that type of technology, I think, is really cool. I mean, when I think of crypto, I think of, right? I mean, currency is a figment of our collective imagination, right? That's what currency is, right? It's a piece of paper or a coin. And it has value because we all believe it has value. So I think why can't crypto, why can't that have collective value, right? Amongst all of us, right? There's less and less doubters every day on what cryptocurrency can bring. So, you know, we could probably go on and on about cryptocurrency, but I think that's super, super interesting. And then, you know, kind of on a personal level, right? The building out of passive income streams. I think that's a super interesting you know, thing that I've been diving into, right? Speaking to a lot of people about and trying to better understand, like, how do you optimize those things from a passive income standpoint? So I would say those are probably the things that interest me the most at the moment.
Oh, that's super cool. I love that. And, you know, actually the funny story to add to that, every other Friday we have this, it's very casual Friday night Zoom call with a bunch of people, a bunch of friends. And that's all we talk about. We talk about the different ideas, different trends, and, you know, the passive income opportunities. And it's super exciting. It's just something that I enjoy on the side. So from just to dig a little bit further from passive income perspective, can you share with us anything that's interesting to you that, you know, has a good potential of building a passive income as, you know, as a side hustle or something that people can explore further? Is that something you can share with us?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, so many ways to develop passive income streams. Right. I mean, it's unbelievable. The more you even get into it, the more you realize how many opportunities there are, right? A lot of my focus is in real estate. That just happens to be what I kind of started to jump into. And that's what I've done, right? From a, you know, I have some single family homes and some commercial real estate properties, some with just my family. And then I have a business partner that I do a lot of great work with. And as you probably know, right, picking the right business partner is a really important thing, right? Yeah. You're sharing risk, you're sharing reward, but you got to be along the ride with someone that has a really high integrity, uh-huh. Right? And that you share the same values and you share the same, you know, why are you in this? And I think that's really important. So I'd say real estate, but for some real estate may seem, you know, that it may seem very, it may seem like too much, mm-hmm. Right? Look, you can build an audience on Twitter. You can go build an audience on LinkedIn and you can monetize that, right? Yeah. You can go write a how-to book about something that you are very passionate. Everyone has something that they can do. And I also believe that everyone underestimates something about themselves, mm-hmm. Right? They think something is really easy to themselves. So my advice would be find something that seems really easy to you, right? And that you really enjoy and go write about it or go teach it to someone, right? You can, and if you want to, you can go monetize that, right? I mean, passive income can mean so many things to so many people, but it's just a really exciting thing to think about, right? It changes your concept of time and money. You know, from a 9-to-5 to, well, how can I do both, right? How can I start to do a lot of these different things? Because, you know, look, time is our most precious asset. And if you can build up passive income streams, you've then freed up time to go do the things that you want to do and learn about the things you want to learn about.
Right. I love that. I love those examples. Thanks for sharing that. You know, real estate's very similar, very much into that, you know, investment wise, flipping and all of that great stuff. Super cool. But also something that you're talking about, you know, taking your expertise, your area of expertise, something that you enjoy and try to monetize that. I think that's oftentimes overlooked because it seems, you know, like a huge undertaking. But there's so many tools out there that will allow you to do that. I have a really good friend who was very successful as, you know, as an executive Fortune 500. And then he started blogging, started writing about, you know, his area of expertise. And now he's, you know, he even quit his main job, full-time job as an executive, and now just does this full-time, running his, you know, paid newsletter through Substack, where it just has a huge followership and just people pay for that premium content that he puts out. So that's just one of the examples of,
people will pay for a lot of stuff out there. Right. And again, I implore anyone listening, right? Find that thing that you love, find the thing that comes easy to you, because it probably doesn't come easy to a lot of other people.
Right.
Right. And you find that and you can be off and running. But the big thing is you just got to start, because you never know where it will go.
Right. Absolutely. I love that. I love that quote in terms of you got to start, because, you know, talk is cheap. You can talk all you want about it, but you're not going to see anything until you actually start doing something. So that's great. I love that. Shift gears a little bit. I want to talk about some of the strategies that you deploy, you implement to surround yourself with the top people. As an executive, I'm pretty sure that's at the top of your minds, whether you're actively recruiting or inactively, you're always on the hunt for A players. You're always evaluating people who, you know, I would love that type of person to be on my team. First things first, to give us a glimpse into an interview with Clay. What does that look like? Do you keep that, you know, do you get creative with it? Do you keep it pretty, standard and traditional? But more importantly, what do you look for in some of the responses when you interview a candidate?
Yeah, you know, John, that's a really good question. No one's ever asked me that before. I should re-interview the people I've interviewed and see what they would say, because of course I'm going to be biased about what I think I do. Uh-huh. I guess I'm okay with nervousness at the beginning. Right. I think a lot of people, if you're nervous, it means something to you. Right. And I think that's really good. So I actually don't mind nervousness. I think that's really good. Right. Confidence is great too, but, the nervousness, is probably better than people think, from an interview standpoint. And then, I'm always impressed when someone's asking like really profound questions, right? Like, I want to see genuine curiosity when we're talking. I don't want to see, you know, that you're just saying the things that you wrote down before the interview. I want to see that you are actively listening, right? Actively engaged. Because if you can do that with me, right, in an interview, that means you can do it with a customer, or you can do it with another colleague, yeah, right? And if you actively listen, that's how you really drive new things, new ideas, drive relationships, drive sales, whatever the thing is that you're going to do. And so I think that active listening and that like innate genuine curiosity is, I think, a wonderful trait in anyone. So I definitely look for that. and then you'll probably laugh at this. I mean, I mentioned I had a sales background. I want someone to trial close me at the end, right? I don't want to just leave it where they leave it open-ended, right? Because I want them to trial close me, right? Like, ask me, what would prevent you from moving me forward in the process? Or do you have any hesitations with me working in this role? Right. I want that. Cause if I get that, I'm always impressed when someone gets that, and it's amazing. Not many people do it. Right. Yeah. So it really stands out when someone does that. Post interview, obviously I want to see a follow-up, because if you're following up with me, it's a habit. You're going to follow up with your customers or, you know, other people. I think it's a good thing. But specifically within that follow-up, if you ask for feedback, I think that's a really good thing, right? If you are seeking feedback on how you did, right, that means that you have curiosity. That means you have a desire to be better, right, and a desire to learn. And a lot of those things are really hard to teach.
Well, I love those examples, because part of, you know, the kind of the centerpiece of the company I'm with, ProSource IT, is, you know, partner with companies and helping them find very niche talent. We focus on IT, we focus on, you know, data engineers, we talk about, you know, site reliability engineers, those guys, very unique unicorns. But a lot of times, you know, as we prepare them for the interviews and we prepare them for, you know, the actual conversation with the hiring managers and so forth, a lot of those points, you know, we stress that, but you'd be amazed at, you know, how rarely that does come up from a candidate perspective, to really ask for feedback and try to, like what you said, I think it's pretty genius in terms of being able to get to some type of, you know, not even a direct response, but some type of action at the end of the interview in terms of, you know, how to, you know, what was your feedback? How do you think I did? What are the next steps and so forth? So that's pretty cool. And, you know, from a standpoint of just that follow-up after the conversation, tying that back to how people would normally operate, as a follow-up with the customer, whoever else they're dealing with. I think that's super important. You don't see that often. It seems so basic, but oftentimes overlooked.
Oh, it is. And you know, another thing that I've really liked as well is the precursor to the interview, right? Like you've got 30 minutes with me, maybe 45 minutes, right? There's a lot to consume there. So I think the smartest people will send something pre-interview. And I've actually seen people send a video to me, right? To say, this is who I am, right? This is what I'm about. And so that I can see that prior to the interview, right? Get a sense of who this person is versus what they just are on paper, uh-huh. Right? Maybe it's a video. Maybe they send me a, you know, 2-paragraph intro to who they are, right? And that helps jumpstart the interview, and it gets us to, we can have more substance within the interview time because I got to know them a little bit. And again, it also ties back to, if they're going to do that with an interview, they're going to do that with their most important clients, right? Prior to a meeting, they're going to be very organized. They're going to have a precursor to the, you know, to the meeting. So I just think it's another thing that popped in my brain that I think would be is a powerful tool from an interview.
I love it. I'm actually typing up a note about that. You know, it's putting some type of introduction about yourself. I think that's, you know, I think that's pretty genius in terms of giving the interviewer the context about yourself and let them prepare as well.
And you completely differentiate yourself by doing it.
Yeah. Exactly. Because, you know, the interview is such a, you know, short window of opportunity to, you know, get the message across. And a lot of times it's all based on these like small cues. So if you do that kind of homework that, you know, prior to the actual interview, I think that's pretty cool. So thanks for that advice. I'm definitely going to steal that from you and with a lot of our candidates. When it comes to actual strategies to attract the top talent to join you, join your organization, join your team, what has worked well for you in the past, or maybe what has not? Where have you failed and what have you learned? Just curious to hear about some strategies that, like, you know, you did that and that, you know, led to this type of person joining your team and you're like, oh wow, this was so cool. I'm definitely going to try to do that again.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's all about culture. I mean, and that's such a broad term, but people desire direction, right? Mm-hmm. But more importantly, they desire to feel important, right? That's like every single person has a desire to feel important. So, right, by respecting people's time, right, genuinely appreciating their work, right? You know, we kind of preach servant leadership at Tech Data, and it comes from the top down. And I think that's a great way to attract and retain talent, mm-hmm. right? If, you know, I also believe that if, you know, I've read that if you can't see yourself working for someone for life, you shouldn't work for them for a day, you know, and that just gets to culture, right? So like, if we have a team that has a bunch of people that people think that they can work for life, work for life, right? You've got a great setup. You've developed an awesome culture, right? We're doing something right. But building a culture is really, really hard. You know, it takes a lot of time and it takes a lot of consistency. But it's really fun when you have an environment that, you know, allows for failure, allows for creativity. There's an openness, right? And an ability to feel and be important and be appreciated, right? I think people, it doesn't have to be hard, right? Appreciate what people do, right? Praise really specifically, right? When you're giving praise or positive feedback, be really specific. And, you know, I'll point to an example for me, right? When I was thinking about coming to Tech Data, right? I loved my time at IBM, right? I was provided tons of a great opportunity and I had no desire to leave. But as I went through my interview process with Tech Data, right? They were talking about servant leadership. They were talking about diversity and inclusion. They were talking about all these things that they truly believed in, right? And I was lucky enough to interview with, right, the top executives within the company from the CEO down. And all of them said it. And you can, I mean, you know, John, when you're in a discussion with someone, you can tell if someone's being genuine, right? And I felt that genuineness coming from the CEO, coming from, right, the other C-level, you know, folks within the organization talking about servant leadership and how important that was to the culture. And, you know, my thought was, if I'm going to walk into this, right, I know I have to buy into servant leadership, which I 100% did. I didn't even realize what the word was before I came in and before I started talking about it. But I'm like, if this is coming from the top down, it has the best chance to succeed, right? If people are truly caring about this. So I think that that building that culture and getting buy-in from the top down is huge. But yeah, I think it's, there's a number of ways to do it, but that's how I go about it.
No, that's, you know, it makes sense. That's, you know, there is no right or wrong around this, but when you boil this down to the type of leadership, the type of environment, the type of culture, and what are you going to get out of this as a, you know, as a professional, and also how you, you know, you can contribute to that, to the greater mission. I think that's, you know, sounds cliche, but at the same time, you know, it works and it makes sense for someone to be able to attract the top talent to join you, because, you know, you can throw all the money, the perks and the benefits, you know, at people all you want, but that's, it's a short-term, you know, benefit. It's a short-term fix. It's not something that's sustainable. So that's pretty cool. Thanks for sharing that. Curious, what are the different sources of information that you utilize on a daily basis? Whether that's a particular blog you subscribe to, newsletter, or there's a Twitter feed that you follow, share with us the sources of information that, you know, that Clay uses on a daily basis.
Sure. So I, you'll probably find if we dive into this a lot that I go pretty broad, right? You know, I'll get specific in some areas, but you know, I love all forms of learning, right? Podcasts, books, newsletters, Twitter. My favorite podcast right now is Unmistakably Creative by Srinivas Rao. You know, he interviews super creative and thoughtful people from all over the world, all different, you know, backgrounds. And most of those people you've never heard of before. Mm-hmm. And so right. I think it's really cool, you know, lots of really cool people doing lots of really cool things. So that would be the highlight there. You know, I do subscribe to a couple of newsletters. James Clear, who wrote Atomic Habits, his Rob Thomas, who's an executive at IBM.
Subscribe to him as well.
Tim Ferriss, right? A lot of people are subscribed there. So I there's a couple of newsletters that that are there. And then on Twitter, gosh, there's a lot of follows that I like, but the ones that come to mind, Shane Parrish, Jack Butcher, David Perrell, and mm-hmm. then man, books. God, we could have an entire podcast about the books.
No, I love that. I love those examples, and we'll list those out for our listeners in the episode notes so that our listeners can reference to that. Clay, last but not least, you mentioned books. What are you currently reading? And if you could think of a book that you always recommend to others, what is it, and why do you recommend it to everyone?
Man, so what I'm reading right now, so I usually try to only read two at a time. I'm actually reading three. I think it may be holiday season, and you know, I just have a little bit more time maybe to read a little bit. But right now, reading The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle. It's basically about, you know, being present and, you know, being present, right? Not thinking about the past, not thinking about the future, but being present in whatever moment you're in right now. So that's a unique one I'm reading. The other one, Factfulness by Hans Rosling. Really, really interesting, but basically the premise is, you know, yes, the world is bad. There's plenty of bad in the world, but it's actually better than we think. It's actually way better than we think. And it's improving at a faster rate than we think, right? Despite what we see in the news and other sources. So it's really interesting, really interesting perspective there in book. And then I was actually really excited for the holidays. I got the Almanac of Naval Ravikant.
Oh yeah.
And it's really, really well done. I mean, I've basically flown through it in 2 days, right? It's all of his thoughts on all of Naval's thoughts on wealth and health. And it's really delivered in a really succinct and powerful way by the author, Eric Jorgensen. You know, Naval is, for those that don't know, he started angellist.com, and you know, he's big in the VC community, but he's the only person that I've ever heard of that is really well-read in philosophy and well-versed in technology and business. So it's a really cool combination, and he's got some really cool insights. And then let's see, you asked, what would I recommend to anyone? I would probably go with Atomic Habits by James Clear. So the book is basically about, you know, what's the simplest and most effective way to drop habits and to form habits. Uh-huh. And it applies to literally everyone, right? We as humans, right, we're the combination of our habits and the people we hang around with most, right? That basically makes up who we are. And everyone has habits. Everyone has good ones. Everyone has bad ones, right? The more good ones we have, the better we're going to be in the long term. So, you know, it doesn't matter who you are, what age you are, you know, where you live, right? Habits play an insanely important role for us, and they apply to everyone. So that's why I'd recommend that one.
I love it. It's definitely on my list. And I like yourself, I follow James Clear, you know, on Twitter, and a lot of great tips that he shares from the book. And I'm like, I got to read this book at some point. I got to stop just following your little tips from the tweets. So for sure, definitely thanks for those recommendations, Clay. And just in general, can thank you enough for all of the, you know, the lent expertise to us today. I know it was a very short but very insightful conversation. I personally learned quite a bit. I look forward to staying in touch with you, and perhaps we can do another episode in, you know, in about a year or so and see how much have transpired. So thank you so much for that.
Thanks, John. Looking forward to doing it again. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.